BBC LearningEnglish.com presents Talk About English, a series of radio features that support your English language studies.
Hello and welcome to Talk About English. Today we have the second programme in our series on culture, Who on Earth Are We? In this programme, presenter Mark Beebe tries to answer the difficult question, what is culture? Here's Mark.
Culture is a difficult word to define, but that's what we'll be attempting to do today, trying to answer the question, what is culture? More importantly, perhaps, we'll also be thinking about why culture is so difficult to talk about. But let's start with a definition. Here's Rebecca Fong, who teaches a course in intercultural communication at the University of the West of England.
When you think about it, culture is really a very difficult thing to define. And if you ask yourself the question, what is culture, and you try to come up with a definition, I think you'll find that all of us would come up with a slightly different type of definition. One very broad definition suggests that culture consists of ideals, values, and assumptions about life that are widely shared among people and that guide specific behaviours. So we're talking here about shared assumptions or patterns of behaviour within specific societies.
Inshallah is a very popular phrase in the Middle East. It means if it's the will of God, literally. Now it doesn't necessarily have such overt religious connotations as we might expect, but what it does reflect is a certain fatalism amongst many people. They feel that life is, to an extent, controlled by external factors. So the concept of the Westerner as someone who's constantly striving to improve themselves and their situation is an anathema to people there who don't feel that there's very much in a practical way they can do to change that.
Ailey Hamilton with an example of a view of life shared by people in one particular part of the world. But perhaps this idea that culture can be defined by the ideals, values, and assumptions that a group of people share is too general. What about art, food, language, sex? Here's Rajni Baldani from India, Dion Charmaine from Jamaica, and Kyung Cha Yu from Japan, helping Rebecca Fong with a more detailed way of thinking about culture.
Quite a practical way of looking at culture is to divide it into the three groups, products, behaviours and ideas. And in the first group, products, we think about all those things that a culture produces, its architecture and its food and its music and folklore and literature. Those are the visible products of a culture.
I would describe my culture, the Indian culture, as being extremely vibrant and diverse, complex in every aspect, art, literature, folk, the oral tradition. We are really very rich in all aspects.
In the second group, we'd find behaviours, that's either verbal behaviours, language, or non-verbal behaviours such as gesture and communication. Also habits, routines, social etiquette, all of these things would come under the heading of behaviour.
Silence in Jamaica is a good thing. It's very much a sign of respect, and if you're basically being spoken to, especially by someone that's older than you and so on, and you raise your voice, then that's being disrespectful.
And then in the third group, we'd find ideas or our worldview and all the things that go to make up our worldview. So in this group, we'd be thinking about things like our attitudes and our beliefs and the way that we organise such things as our societies. Are they class-based societies? What are the relationships and roles within our societies between men and women, for example?
In Japan, what's supposed to happen is women should follow the men.
BBCLearningEnglish.com.
As we've heard, cultures change. Even so, we could get a good idea of what a culture is like by looking at the things that people produce, the way they behave, and the way they see the world. But perhaps a better definition of what a culture is was first devised more than 40 years ago by the North American anthropologist Edward T. Hall.
One of the most famous definitions comes from Edward T. Hall, who was one of the founding fathers of the field of intercultural communication, if you like. And Hall's definition suggests that culture is the sum total of the way of life of a people. That's a nice definition because it includes all of the things that we've been talking about. And probably all of the ideas that you or I could come up with would be contained under that umbrella definition. Culture is the sum total of the way of life of a people.
Hall's definition captures a complex problem very neatly. But he went further. He also gave a very good reason for why we find it so difficult to say what culture is. It's because the culture we grow up in seems so normal that we don't even notice it's there. Here's Rebecca again with comments from Mahmoud Jamal from Pakistan and Kyung Jae Yu from Japan.
Hall adds that, strangely enough, what it hides, what culture hides, it hides most effectively from its own participants. And by that, what he means is that we grow up inside a culture. We're born into a culture. The culture is there already. And so the rules of the culture that we're born into are invisible to us. We can't see them. We can't see the norms. We can't see the assumptions. We can't see the behaviour patterns. All of the patterns within our society are invisible to us. In fact, our behaviour is actually controlled by culture. So we're not free, really. We're actually acting in a way that is patterned, and we acquire all the rules of the culture almost without knowing it.
One of the interesting discoveries I made in England was I used to speak very loudly, and my colleague, who was a man from India, he told me, "Why are you shouting?" And I didn't mean to shout, I used to speak loudly, and I noticed that people whispered and talked very softly. So I used to have arguments with this guy. I said, "Look, I'm just talking like I naturally talk." And he would say, "Look, this is not accepted here. You must tone down. You must cut down." And so I found this very peculiar.
Even in a culture that seemed quite similar, let's say from a country that was very near yours or just across the water, or a country that you expected to be quite similar to your own, you might find that there were some quite different patterns operating within that society that made the culture quite different underneath.
We are not supposed to touch the people, even parents and children. It's embarrassing touching somebody. When I went to Korea first time, I was taken back. They touch the people a lot. I mean, as long as they regard you as a friend or one of your family, suddenly they hug you, they touch you, they hold your hand. Even walking down the street, my cousin holds my hand, hugs me, and then I was taken back and got so, so embarrassed. You can't do that in Japan. People think you are odd. And in Japan, being thought you are odd, odd one, is a very wrong thing.
You acquire your own culture through growing up in it, almost as you acquire your first language when you're a child, through experience and through doing it, through using it. But if you think about learning a second language in school, you actually have to think about the rules and think consciously about how to manipulate the different aspects of the language, the vocabulary and the grammar and so on, before you can use it. So it's quite a different process. And in just the same way, learning another culture would be like having to learn the second language in school. It would be conscious. You'd have to think about the rules. You'd have to ask yourself questions about the attitudes and the beliefs. Now, all of this might seem quite complex and, in a way, unnecessary and removed from real life. But to think of these things theoretically can actually give us a framework through which to consider our own experience.
Rebecca Fong. The culture we grow up in is invisible to us. We don't look at it because it's normal. This is the way life is. But as we heard in our last program, learning about another culture is an effective way of beginning to see our own. As Rebecca points out, however, learning about another culture is as complicated as learning another language. We need to learn the rules. Just as language has its building blocks, its grammar, nouns, verbs, and so on, we need to find the building blocks of culture, things that we can look at and compare across cultures. And that's what we'll be doing in this series over the coming weeks, beginning in our next programme with a relationship between culture and language itself. Before we finish today, though, a word of warning. Studying culture, learning the grammar, is not a simple process. Culture is not one big monolithic thing where people are all the same, all homogenous. People get in the way. And that, of course, is one of the great reasons why culture is so difficult to define. I'll leave you with a final word from Rebecca Fong and Mahmoud Jamal. Join us next time.
Although there are these different activities that you can look at, culture is not a simple, objective thing like that. It's much messier in terms of the fact that individuals respond to all of these things quite differently from the generalisations that we can make about the group. So there's a kind of matrix, if you like, of activities on the one hand, but individual, emotional, personal, human factors, intelligence and things like that, that mesh with how we deal with these activities.
Just like probably English people saw people from Pakistan or Bangladesh or India as being one homogeneous group, I also used to see English people as one homogeneous group. So that was the first breakdown of my stereotype of English people, that English people are a variety of people from a variety of classes, from a variety of backgrounds, from a variety of regions.
That was Talk About English from bbclearningenglish.com.